to where we were 2 weeks ago. We were looking at the 37th Psalm. As we were studying the Beatitudes, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Meekness is a quality that requires cultivation on most of our parts. At least I'm not a meek and quiet spirit naturally. I have to grow in meekness. And the definition of meekness is someone that is compliant to the will of God and desires it in his life in every way. And Jesus was, of course, the model of meekness. In Matthew chapter 11, of course, he says, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden. Come, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly of heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls." She demonstrates meekness, or he demonstrates meekness, in the fact that he says, "I do always the will of my Father." And that must be my goal, to always do the will of my Father. The passage in Psalm 37 I have found to be a great teacher for me in coming to grow in my meekness. And we right now are at the 23rd verse of the chapter. And as we've noticed several principles relating to meekness and why I can be a meek individual and allow God to be in charge and trust him with everything. This verse especially means a great deal to me. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. He delights in his way. God is delighted that you're here today. God is delighted that you make worshiping him a priority. Do you like to delight your loved ones? I like to do things just to see the light in the grandkids' eyes. The smile. Oh, I see some of y'all are bad about that too, aren't you? Isn't it fun to spoil them and send them home to mom? you kind of get a little vengeance back there when you was trying to raise them and they were being so difficult, right? Now, Sister Barnes, you really like that, don't you? I can tell. Yeah, isn't it something to think that God would delight in anything I did? You know, I feel so unworthy. I feel so useless, so hopeless, so sinful. And yet God delights when we accidentally get it right. And I just think that's just such a good feeling. And not only does it say he delights in us, but our steps are ordered by the Lord. The idea is arranged. He is. I have a footnote on that, and I've thrown an arrow to it. It says established. Jesus in Matthew chapter 10, as he prepared his disciples to go out on the limited commission and prepared them to face opposition, persecution, for their work. I remember that's when he told us, don't be afraid of those who can kill the body, but fear him who can destroy both body and soul in hell. If you're afraid of him, you don't have to be afraid of anybody else. One of the folks I listen to on Christian radio will end his show every time. Let's see, he doesn't use this in every time. He's got to use it more and more. Fear God and nobody else. And that's what a Christian needs to do. Fear God and fear nobody else. But he went on to say in that passage, of course, about how not one sparrow can fall to the earth without God's notice, and you're worth more than many sparrows. In the Gospel of Luke, when he's talking about this, he talks about five sparrows, and not one of them can fall to the ground without God's notice. And that's where he says also in Matthew 10 about your hair, of your heads being numbered. That's how much he loves us and how much he cares about us. And as we talked of that, there was a psalm that I immediately think of also that helps me in understanding God's intense care and attention that he gives to us, and that's the 139th Psalm. It's also a psalm by David. And if it's all right with you, I would like to look at that as we think of God's intense care and attention that he gives to each one of us. And David, in this psalm, gives me a great understanding of how important each person is, each human life is in the eyes of God. It's hard to imagine a God so great, so big, so loving, that he cares for each one of us in this very personal kind of way. And yet it's by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit that David writes these things, and he applies them to himself, but that also applies to you and to me. It's beautiful. Let's read this psalm together, Psalm 139. Lord, you have searched me and known me. He means you know all about me. Is there anything in you that he doesn't know? You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought from afar. You comprehend my path and my lying down. You ever go around and check on the babies? You think back about those days when they were all at home? Our second little daughter, we would always find her asleep on the landing. There was a landing in our stairway. The bedrooms were upstairs and the living area was downstairs. And we'd put them all to bed early. But she would always come out there and we'd find her. She'd snuck out there and she's laying on that landing asleep. She knew to come on down, she'd get scolded. But we'd find her asleep there on that landing. And God knows where you sleep. Now, he knows what you do. And are acquainted with all my ways. And there's not a word on my tongue, but, oh, behold, O Lord, you know it all together. Those words you didn't want the preacher to hear, God heard them. Every single one. You hedged me behind and before. In other words, he's protecting you. Remember when Jesus is talking about a man who builds a vineyard? He builds a tower and he hedges it to keep it protected. This last week, I spent quite a little bit of time getting an electric fence around my garden. I had an old farmer tell me once, somebody told me Irish Spring soap. I've tried that twice. I think the deer are so acquainted with people and people smells where I live that doesn't hold them off at all. I could see deer tracks all through my garden. I didn't see any damage yet, but I knew it was coming. So I worked real hard to get my electric fence up. I had an old farmer tell me this. He said, put a single strand just about nose high around your garden and then hang little strips of tin foil on that wire every so often. And that curious deer will come up there and stick its wet nose up there and the fire will fly about that far and they won't come back anymore. I was watching a little button buck one day. I just had to be the right time. And he came up there and he did that. That deer, I'm serious, he jumped straight up 6 feet at least and come right down and landed. Look this way, look that way. He didn't know what hit him. And man, that wire hit me a couple of times. That's why I act like this morning. It's bad. You can't hit it. I got one strong enough, they said, to keep an elk out. You can't hit it and not yell. I believe it. I don't think you can hit it and not yell. But anyway, I'm taking care of my garden. And God has done that for you. God has protected you. God watches over us and cares for us. You hedged me behind and before, and you laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. It's beyond my understanding how God could be that way with every single one of us. And yet that's exactly what the scriptures teach. My brother Bill Watkins, taught the Bible class in the summer series they're having at Woodson Chapel just last Wednesday evening. And he spent quite a little time talking about trying to help us understand the greatness of God and the majesty of God and what he really has done. And you could look up his lesson. It's worth hearing. It's as good as I've ever heard as he describes the creation. You know, when David says, when I behold the stars and the works of your fingers, what is man that thou art mindful of him and the Son of Man? He talked about the creation. And I've heard this. The other time that I heard it explained this well was at the Creation Museum. Any of you ever been to the Creation Museum or the Ark? They are well worth attending. They are well worth attending. We took our grandkids to the Creation Museum. It's like going to Disney World, only it's in an atmosphere. I mean, you've got the dinosaurs and all this kind of stuff, but it's explained from biblical perspective. Now, these are evangelicals, and so they are not going to teach the way of salvation correctly, but they will give you a wonderful, wonderful view of understanding the creation and the reason that God obviously is the creator of this. There's no way this could happen by accident. And it goes into all that. And there they had a video. They have several shows you can go to and lectures, and then you can walk through time. You go by Adam and Eve, and you go on up through the time and all like that. And, of course, now they've built the whole ark and all like that not very far away. And I haven't been to that, but they say that is fantastic also, as they explain how you really could put the two of each kind of the animals on the earth in the ark. Very, very useful stuff. But his message is as good as I've ever heard the description of really what a vast universe this is. That'd be Woodson Chapel live stream last Wednesday night would be the date. But it will blow your mind as he describes that. Okay, where can I go from your spirit? Can I get away from God? Do you ever watch your kids close when you have them in Walmart? You better. We've lost them twice in Walmart. And Patty learned she can't trust me with children. One time I left one at church, and somebody called me and said, John, named one of our kids, says, your kid's still here. Another time I left one in the cemetery in December. I still remember that little guy. One of the elders, we'd had the church bus there, we'd had a burial, and one of the elders, I was fixing to drive off, and one of the elders said, John, isn't that your son standing over there by that tombstone? I still remember the vision of him standing out there in the snow. Daddy just about left him. God's not like that. God doesn't ever forget you. God doesn't ever forget you. Where can I go from? And notice how attentive God is to you. If I ascend into the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, hell is incorrect. That's not a correct pronunciation translation at all. No, God is not in hell. You're punished away from his presence and the glory of his might. No, Sheol is the correct word in the original language. Now, that is the abode of the dead. God does know about the dead. In fact, Jesus said to the thief on the cross, this day thou shalt be with me in paradise. Yes, sir. What did I say wrong?
No, you didn't say they're wrong. I was just asking. I was fixing to ask you about that word hell in there.
Okay.
You did good. On
I
it.
Did good?
Yes.
That's amazing. I didn't expect that.
I'm just going to ask you about that.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah. That is. I don't know why that was ever translated that way. That's not what the original says. And if you check any of the later versions, it won't have that. I don't think. I think you'll find it'll say the abode of the dead. Sheol is the actual term in the original. If I ascend to heaven, you're not there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, if you get on the airplane and fly to the other part of the country, God's there, just like he's here, right? You can't get away from him. And even there you shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. Remember the kind of promise we've seen over here in Psalm 37? He's going to not only order your ways, but he's going to establish them. And he's going to be with you. If I say, surely the darkness shall fall upon me, even the night shall be light about thee. He can see in the dark as well as he can in the light. I've never forgotten, we were doing a TV program, Bible Answers, a number of years ago. One of the preachers was answering a question about God, the all-seeing eye, watching us. And he said, just think how foolish it is of a drunk man. He goes and buys him a bottle. He puts it in a brown bag. He wraps the bag tight around the bottle. Anybody can see the shape of that, what it is. And then he goes around in the alley and he opens it and looks God straight in the eye. He's not hiding anything from God. You haven't hidden anything from God. He knows the very worst about me. John makes the point that if your conscience condemns you, he's greater than your conscience. God knows everything about David. He knows everything about you. And the amazing thing is, he loves me. He loves me. I don't love me. There's things about me I don't love. How about you? He loves us. He loves us. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you, and the night shall shine like the day. The darkness and the light are alike to you. And verse 13, for you formed my inner parts. The idea is here, in the original, the language is he created you. The same word, the Hebrew language has only about 2,000 words. And so one word will serve several purposes. The word used here can mean to create. It can mean to purchase. In other words, God made you. There isn't anything about you that isn't his. He made you. He did it all. He formed your inner parts. The inner parts is referring in the original to the idea of the heart and the lungs, the mind, the inner things about you. You have covered me in my mother's womb. And there's a footnote on the word covered here. If you look over at that, it says literally you wove me. It's the idea of needlework. Any of you ladies do needlework? Embroidery? Okay. That's the way he pictures God making him, that personally, that you made me. The more you study about the human body, the more amazing you are, amazed at his creation. How anybody could dare to think, anyone would be stupid enough to think, as complicated as your body is, that you're an accident. I've seen a lot of accidents, but I never saw them turn out pretty and good. Have you? Ever? I mean, it's hard to be this stupid. You can't be this stupid without trying really, really hard. You just don't want to think. Has anybody else watched Mike Huckabee? What is he on? Trinity? TV every 7 o'clock on Saturday evening. He had a gentleman on there that had written books, and he's done a documentary in talking to people about transgender and homosexual ideas. And he says if you let them talk, you can hear they don't make any sense. If you just let them talk. And I'd like to go. I haven't done that yet, but let's see. The Wire. The website is called The Wire. It's kind of a paper that he puts out. But anyway, it doesn't make sense. And to think that the human body could be as complicated as this and nobody thought it up, it's not possible. It's totally impossible. Can't ever be true. And so he describes how carefully God has made him. You covered me in my mother's womb. And the idea is that he took care of you. He made you as you would knit a garment. Patty took on a project a few years ago. She knit a bedspread for a king-size bed with the edges going to the floor on both sides. That thing, you can't hardly get it in a bushel basket. It's so big. And she would bring it to church every Sunday, and we would stay over like we did here when Mike was sick, and she'd work on that all day during the... And I don't know, did some of the ladies ever come and help you on that, any, Patty? No, you did it every stitch. Well, that thing, it is huge. Well, you were made like that by God. In verse 14, he says, I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And the idea of the words here are the idea of being in awe at what God has done. When's the last time you cut yourself? What'd you have to do to get well? Nothing. When's the last time you broke something in your car? What'd you have to do? Did you just sit back and let it heal? It don't heal, does it? Nothing else heals but you. How about that? Maybe your dog or cat might, but yeah. Now, almost every time I'm out, Patty will say, what did you do to yourself this time? And I won't even know I did it. She'll say, I don't know. I don't know. I don't remember. And it just heals up, and I just keep on going. How about you? Yeah, this is neat. But we can't reproduce that. We can't reproduce that. They keep saying, talking about computers taking over the world. They can't fix themselves. We've got one of those vacuum cleaners that has its own, but I got to go around saving that thing all the time. It talks to my phone. The other day I knocked down the dustpan and the broom, got those with the handles on it. It got blocked itself in. It sat there and run its battery down before it could finally figure out. It couldn't get out of there. It had to go help it. They got a long way to go. Okay, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. It is talking about your DNA. It's talking about your genetics here, is the idea in the original language. Nothing else has this. You know, people who want to change their very chemistry from being a boy to a girl, it's not possible. No matter how much paint you put on a pig, it's still a pig. And a boy is still a boy, and a girl is still a girl. Every cell in their body is. You can't change these things. God did this. Marvelous are your works that your soul, and that my soul knows very well. My frame was not hidden from you. Verse 15. Literally, bones. My bones were not hidden from you. When I was made in the secret and skillfully wrought. The ESV uses the word intricate. I went to my cardiologist a few weeks ago, my annual visit after 2 years of COVID, missing him, missing seeing him, because I didn't go in with all that COVID going on. It didn't matter, got it anyway. Anyway, I showed him a picture of my garden. I said, here's my exercise gym. And he says, he used the word intricate. It looked intricate to him. It's doing real good. Anyway, I may bring you some goodies someday. Who knows? I saw this bulletin article one time, this joke. Oh, I forgot to do my joke, didn't I? I forgot to do my joke. I guess I'll just save it for next week. Now, I'll use this one. It said, when you come to church, be sure to lock your car or someone might fill it with squash. There, that's a pretty good joke. That's pretty. Maybe I can do that for you one of these days. Anyway. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed. In your book, they are all written, the days fashioned for me, when as yet there were none of them. God had plans for your life when there were none of them. My God and I has a line in it about that, doesn't it? The song, when before they were meant. I can't think how that goes right off, but I believe if you find that song, you'll find this idea in there, that there was a plan for your life before you were made. Yeah, God has a plan. God has a plan. Now, do you follow his plan? Well, if you're developing the character of meekness in your life, you'll be trying to follow his plan, trying to walk in the steps of the Savior, stepping in the light, stepping in the light. Verse 17, he begins talking about God's great intense thought of you. How precious are your thoughts to me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I should count them, they would be more in number than the sand. And I've got Psalm 21 marked there. Psalm 121. We're in 139. So we just have to back up a little ways here. Psalm 121, the first four verses. I will lift up my eyes to the hills. From whence comes my help? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is my keeper. The Lord is my shade, and at my right hand. The confidence that I can have as a child of God. let's go back. I'm back now in 139, Psalm 139, verse 18. Speaking of God's thoughts, if I should count them, they would be more in number than the sand. And when I awake, I am still with you. So it's almost like he's thought about this so much, he's fallen off to sleep. You ever done that? Now, I'm kind of hyped up this morning because I know I was going to be teaching a Bible class. But if I just go in and sit down, I get up daylight every morning, get out there and work in that garden until it gets too hot to stand it. And after that, if I just go in and sit down and close my eyes, I'll be asleep. Are you like that? Does that matter with God? He's still there. Did you ever hold a little baby until they went off to sleep? Rocked them and just sat there and let them sleep. Hold them. That's where they'll wake up and they'll smile at you. That's kind of the picture that David's planting here of God. You know, Paul talks about we can call him Abba, call him Daddy, our Father in heaven. And he has that kind of relationship with God. And you can do that. The little prayer that we often teach our children when they're small. Now lay me down to sleep, I pray, dear Lord, my soul to keep. And if I should die before I wake, I can't remember the rest of the story. Isn't that awful lost? It was like that. Well, anyway, but the idea that God is there, he's always there. The next few verses, he has some problems in his life, and he talks to God about those in the next several verses. I'm not going to take time to read them. But I do want to notice verses 23 and 24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties, and see if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. When we take the Lord's Supper, we not only are to remember the sacrifice of Jesus, but Paul says, let a man examine himself. Do you do that? Every time I take the Lord's Supper, I ask myself, where are you, John? What does God think of you today? It's a good time to get a good attitude adjustment. That's part of what this is about. To remind us who we are, what's been done for us, and what we better do for Him. That's what it's about. All right, back to Psalm 37. Back to Psalm 37. Verse 24. I'm going to do 23 again, because we're going to go to the other side of the coin now. We're going to go from the beautiful side of the compliant heart to the one that falls. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down. For the Lord upholds him with his hand. I don't like to talk about this part of it. David knew about falling. One time I was reading after a man who had a lesson on Jacob. The supplanter, the heel grabber in the Old Testament, who became Israel, God's warrior, God's prince. And he said of Jacob, who had deceived his brother, his father, stole his brother's blessing, it said of him, he is God's best and worst man. David was nearly that as well. In fact, I think it was C.S. Lewis that says, underneath the surface of every man and woman, a savage lives. I think I used that with you last week about bringing babies into the world, that we have to civilize them. They're all little barbarians. And every one of us has to deal with that battle that Paul describes in the book of Romans, the battle of the flesh against the spirit. Every one of us has to deal with that. Some weeks ago, I used for my funny, the person that gives you the most trouble is the one that looks at you when you shave in the mirror. That's the one. That's the one. How could anyone that could write this psalm do what David did? Time ran out, and it's about to run out on me again today. The first time that I broached this subject with you here in this verse. We're all well acquainted with the story of David and Bathsheba. How of all the wives and concubines he had, he saw one more beautiful woman. And how this man who was so much a man after God's own heart could stoop and do what he did. Did not have the willpower. Did not have the firm resolve of the commitment to his God that he would do what he did. Take that man's woman. And then when he found out she was pregnant, have him killed. I was just thinking about that this morning. When When the prophet Nathan came to David and told him about that rich man that had many flocks and herds and had a guest come to his house, and the poor man who lived nearby had only the one ewe lamb, who was like a daughter to him, who ate food at his table, I took that man's lamb and killed it. David said the man ought to die. David deserved to die. God had laid down the principle right after the flood. If a man sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. How can anybody who is so high fall so low? David said something else about that. When Nathan told him about this man and this lamb that had been killed, he said, the man ought to die and he shall restore that lamb fourfold. Now that's what the law requires. When something was taken by violence, it was to be restored full time. Now, David admits, I have sinned, after he says, you're the man. And then it says God's hidden your sin. But I'll tell you what, David paid fourfold for what he did. Number one, he was told the child will die. You remember how David begged God, wouldn't eat or drink. Child lived for a week. He wouldn't eat or drink, wouldn't get off the ground. And word came, the child died. And then he got up, and he washed himself, and he went and ate. And the people said, we don't understand. They were afraid to tell him the child was dead, for afraid he'd die. And they didn't understand. And he told them. He told them, I thought that maybe God would change his mind. But now he's dead. I can go to him, but he can't come to me. But oh, the price that David paid for the rest of his life. The prophet also told him, because of what you've done, you caused the Gentiles to blaspheme. Now, many years as I've been in the ministry, and Mike, I expect this could be very just as easily true for you. You can think of a lot of people that have done just like David did, and worse. And the shame it's brought on God's people. David brought shame on God's people. Besides that, he also says the sword will never depart from your house. David will suffer for his sin while God has forgiven him. David will suffer for his sin the rest of his life. And so will his family. This is some of the worst thing that I've been in some terrible counseling situations. And the family, how they suffer, the shame they suffer. I'll tell you what. As verse 24 says, though you fall, you shall not be utterly cast down. You will be so sorry. You will be so sorry. I'm thinking right now of a young woman. I baptized her husband. Now they were dating at the time. I baptized her husband. He was not a Christian. They married. And some years later, she divorced him and left him and left the children and lived with another man. Found out later that, I didn't know it at the time, found out later that he had been abusive to her. But some years later, I was back to that church again in a gospel meeting. She was there. She'd come back to the Lord. She'd lost her marriage. And she wanted to talk to me. And she said, I regret so what I've done. I will never get over what I've done to myself and to my family. That's right. You won't. You won't. Time's gone just like I knew it'd be. We're going to continue this next week. I want to talk to you about the shame and the pain David brought to himself. I never forgot it. Ira North had a sermon. One careless moment, a lifetime of regret. That's what we're talking about. As we talk how I develop meekness in my life. Let's close the word of prayer. Dear Father in heaven, we are so grateful that you love us like you do and you've been so good to us and forgive us for failing you. Thank you that you've provided a way of forgiveness. Thank that even when we fall, that you can be there and we can be restored if we'll but repent. Dear Father, please help us deal with the pain we brought in others' lives because of our unfaithfulness. Help us serve you and be as true to you as we possibly can be. Help us, dear Father, overcome the weaknesses that we deal with, the things that anger us about ourselves, and help us trust you, that you would hold our hands for today and for tomorrow and for the days that come our way, that we may be what we need to be in your service and truly develop a meek and quiet spirit, more like Jesus every day. Help us in this world and others with anger and vengeance strike out at us. Help us remember to be like Jesus, and trust you and fear you and no one else. In Jesus' name, amen.